Hello, everybody, and welcome to Actually Comics for May 15th.
We think.
Yeah. No, we're pretty sure.
He's sure. I'm not so sure.
I know. And we're, of course, going to talk about some comic books. And we got a couple of fairly big deal events going on.
Huge.
With some crazy characters coming up that... We're learning the true origin of Naomi this week.
What?
We got some big stuff about War of the Realms coming out. So I guess we'll just kind of start talking about it.
Yeah. Here, let's grab Naomi first.
Yeah.
I mean, not literally.
This is something I wanted to talk about because
I
feel like I'm in the minority in the fact that I just didn't like this issue.
Okay. That
like freaks I have liked the first four issues of this book. And then this one came out, and I was like, oh, I'm immediately, like, totally turned off to this series. We start getting her superpowers show up, and I was like, nope, done. It's just too Green Lantern-y and boring, like, big light show DC comic stuff that I never enjoy.
Huh. Yeah, so Tristan totally floored me with this, like, 5 seconds before we started recording. I had no idea he didn't like it. I think it's great.
Good. I'm so glad. So, David also loved it as well. So
okay. It's just
so that, I'm wrong, but I just wanted to make sure that I got my wrong opinion out there.
I mean, I don't. I like the dialogue. It's a really strong like character issue in terms of like how she deals with the fact that.
True. I mean, and that's the thing is that I love all of the character stuff, and I think that's what he does really well, and I think that. I instantly was like, oh no, this is going a superhero direction that I find boring, especially there are a couple spoilers. I don't want to tell what, but they are definitely unleashing a universe here. This is, we're about to get a thing happening where we're going to have another big pile of characters in this world.
Except for unlike like the dank dimension where the Batman wears like steel bras and stuff. This is like an actual dimension that is sort of like in a cool and interesting and original way tied to DC continuity.
Right. Yeah.
I've been kind of like struggling with like, how do you talk about it without spoiling like so much of it? But basically like you don't really see what her powers are. And a lot of it is kept kind of obscure in the coloring and the storytelling. So it's a kind of a heavy dialogue issue.
That's my only hope is that that's what's going to happen later.
And I think that like you're getting a chance to kind of figure out who the character is.
True.
I don't know. I liked it, but I really liked how, and I don't think this is too much of a spoiler.
Uh-oh.
It is maybe a little bit of a spoiler, but the origin of her is tied to the original Crisis on Infinite Earths
way. That is really not.
I thought it was really cool. I think that in a shared universe where you have like 10 billion characters already, I can understand being put off by that kind of like Yellow Lantern core of blah blah blah, you know,
right.
Like here's 14 million new characters. Like I get that, but I think in this instance it's done in a way that is interesting in the way that some of that Lantern stuff was interesting when it first started too.
Okay. Here, I mean, maybe this is ridiculously nitpicky on my part, but for some reason there's just something about they seem to try this an awful lot where there are these energy based characters and they glow from the inside and they glow from the outside and like their suits have the lines like the Green Lantern movie suit where it's like lighting up from the inside and then there's big lights everywhere. I don't like that type of design personally.
Yeah.
And worse than that, like with the Green Lantern core stuff, when they had all of the colors, when it was just so bright and the coloring was, when they were all using their abilities at once, you didn't know who was who or what was what or what end was up. Everything was just a blur of garbage colors.
I think
is a blur of white.
I get that. I think that you're projecting. I do really honestly think you're projecting a little bit.
Maybe I am.
I do see what you mean in terms of the coloring.
You just picked up a page that was entirely like blurred out with white.
I know. And a lot of the coloring in this issue is done in a way that kind of accentuates that and is dark and kind of obscure. But I just think as a story, it's really well put together. And in terms of a character development, it's still hitting on all of the ways that I want it to. And, you know, I mean, I don't know. Maybe 10 issues from now, I'll be just kind of like, you know, I don't know. But, like, for right now, I like it. It's a world that's seems worth investigating to me. And,
yeah.
And I enjoy, so far, like, all of the characters that are part of this of this comic. Like, I think it's and the storytelling is maybe that the kind of Bendis-y kind of dialogue heavy, but I love that. I love, like, it's like Preacher where,
but
like,
that's
I
all
love
the stuff
way,
that I like about it.
Yeah.
It's so, all the other stuff that makes, and I think again,
but you're projecting
still,
how you feel
right.
about other things onto this.
Yep,
and while
you're
it
right.
does share those sensibilities in certain way on certain superficial levels, it is not the Green Lantern Corps War. It is not the Flash with like a million points of light coming out of his crotch. It's not like that weird New 52 DC design that Jim Lee did where everything had piping. It's not
fair enough.
Like that. It's,
we'll
but,
see.
But design wise,
I'm interested.
Like, yeah.
I mean, it's very Ion. Like everybody's got those, like there's a lot of headgear and a lot of like lights coming out of the middle of the suits and like that kind of 90s stuff that I was never really a big fan of. Everybody's got a Gambit helmet and you know, like,
well,
but
I mean, yeah,
it's
I guess.
It's interesting that
not sure I agree with that.
There's some character or clothing choices that get called out, which I thought was fun. I mean, again, I loved the first four issues of this book, so maybe I need to give this another read before I condemn it. I've already said that like both you and David liked it a lot, so
yeah.
I'm probably in the wrong on this one. It's just my feelings are bizarrely nerdy on this one.
Yeah, I think it's a deep. I think you've revealed a
deep,
little bit
a deep
about
loathing
yourself.
About the way that DC Comics makes bright, shiny characters.
Yeah, it's true, and it is an interesting point that is worth investigating. In other aspects, but it didn't.
It's going to take years
not,
of therapy for me to get to the real source of this problem.
I know. I mean, honestly, like it's something that I generally don't like either. Just for whatever reason, it didn't bother me in this comic book.
Yeah. Fair enough. And again, all the parts that weren't that I did love. So all the parts where they were just talking and hanging out and her and her girlfriend and all that, I was like, this is fun. And I'm really digging this.
Yeah, it's
part,
like she finds out that like she, who she is. And then, but the story takes place in a way where she's just like, it's like, I didn't even want to be around the people that told me. I just wanted to hang out with my friend and tell my friend so that I knew it was, I don't know. It was cool. But I think that like maybe, weird, kind of in an era where computer digital coloring is such that it's really easy to make those kind of light based choices, and so it's maybe overused. So I think that is 100% valid. So I don't think that your opinion is wrong, but I do think it is specific to you.
Fair enough. All right, I will stop bagging on this colorist. Okay, so Aquaman.
I liked Aquaman. It's still like a little bit. The last, it got like really weird and kind of meta
in
the last few issues. This one is kind of pulling him out of that a little bit. And there's a new artist who I actually really, I like, this guy, Bogdanovic. He's good. And I think that DC needs to keep him on high profile stuff, especially because Patrick Gleason is now at Marvel and they need guys with, they need good guys.
Oh yeah. Patrick Gleason.
Yeah. That made me sad. I mean, not so much, because if he's going to do Spider-Man, that's going to be cool.
Okay. I'm going to blow through three things I really liked that are all tie-ins to the big thing.
And a fourth thing that you apparently didn't like.
Oh. Oh, God. Well, you know
I didn't
what?
Hate it.
I'm going to say there are four things, and there are two things I really liked and two things that were okay. I very much dug the main War of Realms.
Yes.
Was awesome. Just
I can get
like,
behind War of Realms.
Strong, fun. I love it. Is this your pile? No, this is okay.
This is my pile.
All right, so I'll put that there. And I'm going to, you know, I'm going to make a compliment sandwich here.
Nice.
And then there was...
So we should say it's War of the Realms number four?
Number four.
Number four already.
And War of the Realms Strike Force, the War Avengers.
I actually didn't hate this.
This was not terrible. This one was pretty fun.
I enjoyed it mainly because it has the Black Knight and Spitfire and Union Jack in it briefly.
Yes, a lot
and
of...
And I like those British Marvel characters. They don't see a lot, but it's a team of like Captain Marvel and Captain Britain and like... some guy that's like a Hulk and a Wolverine. And
yes, a Hulk Vereen, if you will.
Yes, and Bucky.
Which sounds so much like Ben Vereen, it makes me laugh.
Ben Vereen.
Which is like Wolverine just, and Ben.
Oh, man, if he had the like, rat. If he tap danced on like his adamant. Oh, man, they should totally do.
Adamantium tap shoes.
Adamantium tap shoes. Adam Ant. Yum.
Oh, God. Okay, so in the middle of my compliment sandwich is War of the Realms Giant Man.
Did you not like that one?
I didn't hate this one.
Oh,
again, both of these, the Strike Force, the War Avengers, and Giant Man were my two least. I didn't hate either of them.
I thought Giant Man was the best of the tie-in issues.
Really? Week. Even Spider-Man?
Even Spider-Man.
I think you are...
Cuckoo bananas.
Cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs.
No, Spider-Man was good, and I like the design of it, and I like the design of some of the characters, but I'm really mad that he didn't put on the hat.
I
couldn't get past it.
There it is. That's yours.
It's my personal
bias. That's your personal bias coming out.
Spider-Man on the cover and in the regular War of Realms, and on the cover of the Spider-Man and the League of Realms.
He has awesome hat.
A sweet hat. But inside the comic, Spider-Man and the League of Realms, he does not wear the hat. And therefore, it was not my favorite of the comics.
Yeah, I think we might be getting too much inside our own heads on this thing at this point.
I didn't think it was bad, but I actually legitimately did think Giant Man was good.
I'm going to go back and say that I liked Naomi.
Nice. The Giant Man is like, it's Atlas from the Thunderbolts, Ant-Man, who's using Giant Man powers, Goliath, who is the brother of the guy that got killed in Civil War, and another giant man.
Yes, who I don't know.
I don't recognize. But either way, what happens is in the War of the Realms, the Frost Giants have taken over, and so Thor's mom gets the guys who can grow to put on a bunch of blue makeup and pretend to be Frost Giants to infiltrate them, which I thought was just really great. And then the dialogue between all of the characters I thought was well done. It was written. Who wrote it? I'm curious.
Yeah, there was some pretty decent dialogue in that. There were some fun ideas.
Leah Williams. I don't know who she is.
You know what I really wish I had seen in that? When he shrinks down, he's wearing like 10 pounds of blue makeup. I would have liked to have seen the blue makeup just all slough off in a giant pile.
I don't know. They might have explained that maybe it wasn't makeup or something, but I thought it was really good. And I liked. I actually particularly enjoyed the dialogue of it. If you're into the crossovers, I thought it was a more enjoyable of. And Spider-Man one was enjoyable too.
Spider-Man was... I liked Spider-Man almost as much as I liked the main War of Realms one. I thought it was really fun, and I liked... It's another one of those like character-driven Spider-Man stories where it's just basically getting to the core of him as the not killing, he's trying to keep things from going tits up, you know. He's trying to do what he can to keep people from getting hurt, and it's about him negotiating as opposed to fighting. And I don't know, I found that just kind of fun.
Yeah, I do like that there's it's like him and like a troll and like some guy with like a purple fox costume, and like the design of the team is fun. And,
yes,
I would like to see them in a comic outside of a huge crossover.
Yeah, agreed. And also
Spider-Man, Amazing Spider-Man, The Hunted, Part
Spider-Man
5.
Part 5. It is issue 21.
Issue 21.
I love this series, and I'm really digging the whole Hunted crossover.
Yeah.
That's been really fun.
It was very much another chapter in the crossover, and not unenjoyable for me, but also not like, oh my God, this is the best thing I've ever read.
This.
That is Justice League, and it was actually pretty good.
It was pretty good. I actually really enjoyed this.
Yeah. Justice League is continuing their fight in the sixth dimension where they're getting tricked by evil Justice League, and there's some characters, and it's crazy and kind of hard to understand, but it's still fun for some reason.
There's a good Batman moment at the end. Yeah, this manages to be confusing and weird in a way that's fun.
Yeah, yeah.
Which I think is the difference between between that and the other. Yeah. Also, I really love this.
Yeah, that's
Superman 11.
Superman number 11 was actually really good.
Real good.
It's a bit pinup-y, you know, like the big action, you know, like
it is.
But like
DC is getting out of control with this stuff.
I think that in a comic that's only 20 pages, having more than like 3 or 4 pinup size panels, like full page or double page panels, is a little much. Although if you are just, I mean, it's like Ivan Reis, so the art's like really good and like they're great panels. It's just kind of like, I don't know, like
it feels like there are some of these, they're like, there's a 2-page spread in here that didn't even need to be in here.
Yeah, totally.
Like these 2 pages are superfluous.
Yeah.
And in fact, 2 or 3 of the other pinups are like completely superfluous as well.
Yeah. I mean, it's just this crazy space battle.
But it's beautiful.
But there is this really great, these really great Superman moments that Bendis is proving himself to be really, really great at writing. Like where he like shows up to the Thanagar ship and he's like, please ceasefire, please. And they're like, you have no authority. It's like, I said, please. Like, and then they're like, oh, yeah. Okay, sure.
But you did say please. So fine.
And also you could literally destroy us by blinking. No, it's like that Rogol Czar or Big Rock Candy Spaceman or whatever we've been calling him.
I love Big Rock Candy Spaceman.
Big Rock Candy Spaceman. He's back and General
I believe
Zod
we called him Space Rock Fighting Man.
Space Rock Fighting Man. That's right. And he's teamed up with Captain Zod and they are.
He's been demoted.
Oh, General Zod. I'm sorry.
Yes.
Yes. So did you read Old Man Quill?
I did.
Old Man Quill.
I like Old Man Quill, and yeah, I did read it.
It was cool to see a couple characters that have made debuts since after the original Old Man Logan. So you get to see like what certain characters from modern Marvel were doing. I thought that was neat.
Although there's
a character on the cover of this comic that does not appear in the comic, and that is a pet peeve of mine.
That is a big pain in the ass.
I don't like that.
I don't like that either.
Should plan your covers better.
But it does
it's
look
a cool
like
cover, though.
It is a cool cover that looks very much like Adventures in Babysitting.
is it an homage?
Not quite. I don't think it's quite an homage to Adventures in Babysitting.
Oh,
do we want to do this?
Yeah,
next?
Let's do it.
Okay.
And then we can,
it's almost pointless to talk about Immortal Hulk because it's so good.
It is so good. This one
this
was really great.
This book is just so stupidly good.
Huge fans of the Las Vegas era of the Incredible Hulk will very much enjoy this one, but in a very
and
kind
people,
of on its ear kind of way.
And people that like just smash you in the face sci-fi references will also
and
really
like,
love
kind
this.
Kind of specific to like alien references.
There's a lot of alien references, and there's also a couple. There's a single Starship Troopers reference. That's pretty dope.
Yes,
too.
And it is a very good one. Although I will say, I think you could actually make the case that this entire issue, Immortal Hulk number 17, is an entire like the entire issue is an Aliens reference.
Probably
or an alien reference.
Yep.
It's great. It's the Bruce Banner is trapped inside a mountain and he's being hunted by a cyborg who can turn his body into weapons.
Yep.
And wants to kill him.
And wants to kill him because he's the one that
also there's a re
brought him to hell.
A reemergence of a classic Hulk villain with a new twist that is
quite
horrifying.
Amazing.
I honestly don't know why I brought that horrible Nightwing comic. We don't need to talk about it. That comic is trash. I'm sorry if you love Nightwing.
Sorry, everyone.
If you're a big fan
of Dan Jurgens. Jeez.
I like Dan Jurgens. I like Chris Mooneyham. Chris Mooneyham's a great artist. I don't know. I don't understand what they're doing with that comic. It's not trash because they suck. It's trash because the idea of Nightwing as a, like, brooding, scarred, like, guy who hates Batman is, like, just... That's a garbage idea that should
it is,
not have
it is
ever
literally
moved past
just
the, hey, I got an idea, let's do... No.
Yeah, all of
and
these
that's
like
the, that's the
how about we do the
moment.
Exact opposite of what a character is kind of ideas. Yeah. Joe Golem.
Yeah, Joe Golem is cool.
He's an occult detective.
He is, and this is number one of the Conjurors. And it is written by Mike Mignola and Christopher Golden and drawn by Peter Bergting, who is quite good. All of them are good. It's a fun comic. And now that Hellboy doesn't come out, if you're jonesing for your Mignola noir detective hulking guy, Joe Golem might be.
He might be your guy.
He might be your guy.
Okay, Riri Williams, Ironheart number 6.
That's fun.
I think this series is finally starting to get its footing. And maybe not series, I think maybe character. I think that she's been kind of like an amorphous, like just kind of like smartest kid in the room without a lot of personality up until this point. Like you kind of never really got a great sense of who she was.
No, I felt like she was just like, hey, let's do Moon Girl, but instead let's just give
Except
her
Except she's
Man's
older
armor,
and now
right?
she's got
older.
Iron Man armor. And that's how it's felt. And I feel like now she's starting to come into her own. And her relationships with certain characters are starting to flesh out who she is. Mm. The series has been really well written since the beginning, mm-hmm. but it just has, like, her character just hasn't been there as much as I would have liked.
Yeah.
This one has Miles Morales, and the two of them play very well together. Mm-hmm. It's a story about Miles basically takes off, and then he gets caught in a thing, and she comes to visit him, and any more is a spoiler.
That's
so,
wild.
Yeah, it's great. I think this was probably the point when the series is turning around for me.
Nice.
Like
it was a strong book for. I mean, it's not a character that I follow, but I flipped through it and it read well and.
I feel like I'm going to actually follow this series from here on.
Nice.
So, I thought that was cool. I didn't read this. What kind of an idiot am I that I didn't read Farmhand this week?
It was crazy.
This book is so cool.
It is cool, and this one's crazy. Oh. Lots of crazy stuff happens in this book.
Oh, this God, they've still issue, got the horrible called... pug caterpillar. I love that
yes,
guy.
They do. What's the number of this? Number 8?
This guy is number 8.
Number 8, Farmhand by Rob Guillory.
Yeah. Oh, God damn it, it's so good.
Yeah, there's a lot of action in this one, a lot of forward movement in the storyline.
Awesome. Oh, so good. So friggin' good.
Cool. And design-wise, I really dig it. It's cool, these like weird hybrid plant people. Batman. Batman came out.
Okay. Well, that's good to hear.
Apparently, this story is something that you will want to pay attention to because big changes are coming for Batman. And I don't know. I read it, and it's like two stories happening at the same time, and it's very confusing. I'm going to talk about Fair Lady number 2.
Please do.
I enjoyed this number 2, Fair Lady from Image. It is. We talked about the first issue. Sorry, I got a little farther away from my mic than I should be.
I think we both have. This is going to be a bad sounding episode.
Sorry. So Fair Lady is a series of done-in-one mysteries in a kind of like Game of Thrones-ish kind of like if Game of Thrones was like set inside the body of a dead celestial, kind of. And then there are these people that are called Fair Men that are like detectives, but then she's a fair lady. And so she's like kind of there's prejudice against her. And in this one, she is asked to investigate the death of a fair man. And it worked really well as like a world building, but also as like a kind of fun mystery, how it's layered. I really like this book. She also has a large cat man that kind of hangs out and does like stuff, like helps her out on her adventures. So like a kind of a Chewbacca type. A Chewbacca type. It's got like elements of a lot of different stuff kind of, but still feels like original and not like it's not like heavy world building. It's like, okay, you still don't really understand why there's a town inside the body of this giant dead giant human, but maybe that's, you know, I'm assuming that's a story for the future. And then at the same time, it's like the entire issue contains one story that is a mystery that you follow and get a conclusion at the end. I thought it was good.
Awesome. You know, at some point when you have a giant cat person, somebody has to name him Catman Scarruthers.
Yes.
Someday I'm going to get a Catman Scarruthers.
We should actually.
Fine, I'm going to name a character Catman Scarruthers. Can't have it.
Can his sidekick be Ben Vereen?
Ben Vereen and Catman Scarruthers. They're going to be great together.
Yeah, they're going to solve all the crimes.
So Spider-Man, life story number 3, the 80s.
Yes.
This is...
It was actually pretty strong. It was my favorite of the series so far.
It's a very strong issue. But again, it is also pretty depressing. You know, it's kind of not... It's not terribly fun. But I like my Spider-Man light, personally. Well, and this is not a light story.
That's true. Although, so it's... Chip Zdarsky is writing it, and it is basically Spider-Man if... He aged normally from his first appearance. So now that you're in the 80s, it's actually like the first one, the 60s, like it felt kind of like a normal Spider-Man comic. And then the 70s, like I actually didn't particularly think anything strongly about the second one. But this one is like the era of like things that are happening at that time. So like you have Secret Wars and you have Kraven's Last Hunt and you have like these kind of established stories that happened in the 1980s. But Spider-Man is... in his 40s and like the Fantastic Four are old and like things. So it's like, you're starting to really get the concept of it, in a smart way. And I thought it was a little dark, but it wasn't like brutally dark, or needlessly
it was
dark.
Not, it wasn't it was needlessly dark. Like, it just, I mean, it just sucks that we're all going to get old and die.
It does.
And when you see Spider-Man doing it, it's kind of a bummer.
So did you read this one?
What I would like to talk about is probably my favorite book of the week.
Nice. I dug this too.
This is a book from Dark Horse called Last Stop on the Red Line.
Yeah.
Man, I don't know where they're going with this, but I cannot fucking wait to see what it does.
Yeah. So
I don't even know if I know what's happening in this. Are those real monsters? Is my first question.
Well, this is part of it.
Part of the mystery. Okay.
You don't know.
So I don't know that.
There are murders that are happening on. So it's set in Boston, and it is very like New England. The writer is Paul Mayberry. He's been around for a while. I think he did some Vertigo stuff.
Yep.
But he's from Boston and very much about like Boston. So this is a Boston based, but it's there's murders that are happening on a train, but then there are these kind of like vignettes. It starts out in a way that was actually like almost like off-putting to me at first, because it was like you got to that first thing where like shit goes nuts and you're like, did I miss an issue? Like it feels like you missed an issue, but like this is the first issue. So I was like, no, this isn't anything I've ever heard of. This is new. And I kind of stuck through it. And then I started to kind of realize. So it's like basically it introduces you
it's
to the characters.
Just expert is how this is written. It is expertly written.
But I will also say that the art is awesome.
It is. It is. Reminded me a little bit of Bitterroot in the art style.
Sure. Sam Lotfi. I don't know this artist, but man, from the first page, I was like, I'm going to like this. And then I did. It's great. Like a straightforward murder mystery mixed with some bizarre, head trippy, Lovecraftian, like bizarreness.
Some definite cosmic horror stuff going on, but at the same time, it's set with these comic relief characters of these three recovering addicts of some sort who are implied to be three universal monsters, basically. And there's a certain amount of it where you're like, are they just like crazy people who believe themselves to be the universal monsters, or are they legitimately recovering monsters? And it's pretty fucking cool. They're ridiculous. You automatically know the characters as they're introduced. They're so colorful and so smart. I can't say enough good things about this book. the fake Dracula, who is either a real vampire or a fake vampire, whichever it is, he is amazing. The fake werewolf is amazing. They meet a mole person who is amazing. I mean, It's so good. Yeah. This
and let's just like clarify in case you're confused like me. When he says Universal Monsters, he means like Universal Pictures.
Universal
monsters.
Pictures, the '30s famous black and white monsters.
It's really great, and I can't say enough about the art. I think it's the strongest art in any book that's out this week.
Yeah.
It's so good. I can't believe I don't know who this person is.
I
would assume it's because they're huge in Europe.
That's possible. All I know is that this book was not pushed. Like, Diamond did not push this book on me, and it's insane because this is one of the strongest titles to come out in a long time, and I'm frankly bummed out that I didn't get more of it. I'm going to check as soon as this podcast is over and see if it's still available for reorder because I think I only got like 10 copies of it, and I want more because it's really good.
Yeah, it is really good. It's really good. Oh, it looks like it's maybe a Turtles artist. Lotfi?
Huh.
Sam Lotfi. Here's a drawing I found on the internet of him drawing Bebop from the Turtles.
Ooh, that's a very nice Bebop.
That's a great Bebop. Yeah. Sam Lotfi, comic artist.
So if I haven't expressed it enough yet, this book is good and you should read it.
Yeah. The highest possible. That's a double thumbs up. That's a Siskel and Ebert moment.
Yep, totally. And something else.
What are we talking about next?
Let's skip over all the great things and go right to Marvelous X-Men. We're all tired of it.
Yeah, I didn't. I flipped through that book and I don't remember what happened in it at all.
Yeah, it's interesting because this is a stronger issue than it has been for a while, but it's still kind of a nothing issue.
I have no idea what happened in it.
I'm just tired of Age of X-Men, and now that they're basically announcing that they're going to reboot the entire X-Men universe.
What is up with that? Like, why would you reboot everything and then reboot it again like 3 months later? Did they just like, let's reboot it and get everybody interested in it and then reboot it again?
What you're saying to me right now is a conversation I've had 10 times about the X-Men. So it's really hard to.
You mean over the years?
Over the last 10 years. Why did they do it over and over and over again? Yeah, I don't know.
This one is a huge head scratcher for me. Anyway, it's cool. There's a Star Wars Age of Rebellion Lando Calrissian. Is that right? I know I've seen the movie a million times, but they don't really say his last name a lot, and I don't know if Calrissian. anyway, whatever. Lando. It's a Lando comic, and it has really good art, and it's a fun, done-in-one Lando the Scoundrel Who Gambles comic. Also, there's a Teen Titans. We got a couple more good ones coming up that we're going to talk about. Just kind of other things that came out. There was a Teen Titans where everybody gets mad at Robin because he killed Deathstroke in the face.
Yeah, and actually, Teen Titans is kind of fun.
Yeah,
like, I kind of liked this issue. I liked this one particularly because I like what happened at the end.
Teen Titans.
Which I don't want to spoil what happens at the end, but there's a character that's returning into DC that I want to see happen.
That's true.
So I'm excited about the future issues of this.
Uncanny X-Men is also out. Number 18.
It continues to be really good.
It continues to be good. This one was a little, it's weird because they're dealing with Emma Frost and there's a lot of like mind games going on.
So not to get spoilery with anything.
Well, she's on the cover. So.
Well, no. So this is not a spoiler for Game of Thrones, but this was insanely just like Game of Thrones. What happened in this issue mirrors the last Game of Thrones issue so much that it weirded me out.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, unfortunately, I can't say much about it without spoiling both things. But it's fascinating how much the two of them were very similar.
A hit out on you if you spoil Game of Thrones for
yes,
them.
Yes, I don't want that to happen, so I won't say anything more. But it was weird. It was such synchronicity, the way that a character behaved in this and the way that some stuff happened. It was very interesting. Anyway, I will not go any further.
I thought X-Men was all right. It's just kind of like everybody, like Emma Frost is back, but nobody remembers her because she's screwing up their brains.
Yep.
And then also Mr. Sinister is in this issue.
Yep.
who's still around for some reason.
Because he keeps cloning himself. He
keeps cloning himself.
He has his own fire department in this.
He does.
Which it's really, true. That was...
Yeah, the art was a little...
Maybe
like,
my
kind
favorite
of, like,
part.
Over the top in a couple aspects of this one, and I enjoyed it. Tristan is currently flipping through a book that I enjoyed flipping through, which is a magazine from Warrant Publishing called The Creeps, and it is a bunch of black and white horror comics. Pretty good quality on those.
Yeah. They've been great since the beginning. I mean, they keep reprinting Archie Goodwin stories and things, so they have legitimate Warren stuff. So, in
but
here
there's
as
a
well.
Guy who's drawing them that is called Artie Godwin, and I think that might be what I didn't. Maybe there was a
no. There's a legitimate. They I think they legitimately have Archie Goodwin stuff.
Okay, because I saw the name Artie Godwin, and I was like, okay,
that's
like is
funny.
That someone just pretending to be Archie Goodwin? But
probably
Archie Goodwin, man. He's like the patron saint for me. Like just everything he was ever associated with was
really
absolutely
good.
Awesome. And like, I felt like as a teen reader of comics and as a kid reader of comics, like I felt like I knew who he was.
Yeah.
Like he was like a person I knew. Anyway, whatever. The
but
creeps
if
from
you,
Warrant,
if you miss creepy and eerie and
yeah,
any of those,
it's great.
And a Savage Sword of Conan for, I mean, it's or Vampirella. It's great.
You know what I particularly loved about this issue was the first page, the inside cover, the history of gremlins. There's just like this little like super like lightly researched like history of the concept of gremlins. Not the movie, but like the things that appear on planes.
Yep.
I enjoyed it. It had fun art. The gremlins looked exactly like the movie version of the gremlins, which I thought was just like, that's pretty cool.
Guys, we don't give a shit.
Yeah, I dug it.
You'd have to find our office to sue us. Good luck.
Good luck.
We publish this under a bridge.
I'm going to talk about briefly one of my favorite Image series, Skyward. Can't wait for this to get like turned into a show because it's gonna be an awesome show. I really like this book. It's number 13. So the main character has discovered in previous issues that her father, who created the situation where gravity went screwball on Earth and now everybody can fly into space accidentally if they aren't careful, he built an underground world with like an artificial sun and like an artificial sky and like artificial, so like that basically people could live underground and still feel like they were like in a normal world, and they're trapped inside it, which is cool. It was fun. And so that's really too much more would be like giving away the entire story, I think.
Yeah,
I will say yet again, we're in the third arc of Skyward, and it is continuing to be a great, great series. Nominated for a 2019 Eisner Award for Best
New
Series, according to the cover.
Something else that's pretty great.
Yeah,
is,
that Sabrina book is great. I wish the show was as good as
the
this.
The Archie Forever, Sabrina the Teenage Witch. This is a very fun, I like the idea that they basically took the super saccharine Archie version of Sabrina, the super Satan-y modern version of Sabrina, and they just kind of split right down the middle on this one. They kind of they got it. It's occulty. There's, you know, there's like summoning real demons and crazy shit, but it's not so in your face, intensely horror based.
No,
and you still get like fun Archie moments in high school and things like that. It's,
I feel like
it's
this
kind
is
of the perfect if Sabrina.
If I were to, so Sabrina number two, Archie Forever, number one, Kelly Thompson is one of,
yes,
has graduated to being like one of my total favorite comic book writers. Great writing. Everything that she does is great. Veronica Fish is a fantastic artist. The art is really good in this. It is, if you took the, what's her name that did the original teenage Sabrina? She's like a Republican weirdo now.
Oh, Melissa Joan Hart.
Yeah, if you took that version of Sabrina and merged it with the like weird, needlessly dark and satanic version that's on Netflix now and smushed them into like a comic that was fun to read, it would be this. And the the only single complaint I have about this comic is that it is printed on paper that is so light that I feel like if I sneezed, it would tear in half.
That is a
weird,
common thing that's going on.
The
cover quality
of
comics this week is at an all-time low, and it has been bad for
a while. This one is like the most fragile comic. I feel like if I don't immediately bag and board it, it will disintegrate.
Right. Yeah. Like Marvel and DC have been like in a competition to see who can get the thinnest cover stock.
Huh.
That like moisture
will kicking their asses.
Will instantly warp it and turn it into garbage. And and Archie has discovered something even more.
As I learned when my cat threw up on my comics this week and I had to buy them again.
Yes, they're made of tissue paper now.
Thanks, Buzzo.
But yeah, so that's fun.
So that's that. And then the last thing we have to talk about is actually one of my, probably if that last stop on the red line was my favorite, this is my second favorite. And if that one wasn't my favorite, this is my favorite. This is brutal in a way that is good. This is Little Bird number 3.
Oh my God.
I can't.
So good.
It's just crazy. I still don't understand exactly what is going on with the metaphysical version of the events that are kind of taking place in this, but it is brutal. And there is a like very, very sad ending.
Yeah.
But at the same time, there have been other issues of this series that have ended equally as sad. It seems to be kind of how they do things, but Ian Bertram is like a monster. He's the artist of this. And Darcy von Pulgeist is the writer, and Matt Hollingsworth is the colorist. Holy crap. I just love this. And the art is so good that they print black and white versions of the art in the back, so you can just see how good it was before the color went on it, which made it even better.
And this is in direct dichotomy to seeing like Marvel being like, here's your $5 issue that we made out of tissue paper.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, well, this is an Image comic for $3.99 with 40 pages that's like, that has a gorgeous, like, heavy stock cover. Like,
the nice glossy paper.
It's like, beautiful.
Good quality glossy paper.
The story is better than anything the big two are putting out. The quality is better of the actual paper and the cover. It's cheaper. It's just like, it's frustrating. You would think that with the volume that those guys do, that they could get better quality for the stuff that they're putting out.
Yeah, I don't know. This is like in terms of like just actual aesthetic of like a comic like that you hold in your hands. Like,
oh,
this
my God.
Is you don't get better. And then just Little Bird is like the story is good, the art is jaw droppingly good, the coloring is amazing, and you care about the characters. It's this weird kind of like. It's starting to feel kind of Dune-like to me in a way, which that's not terrible, right?
No.
Like, I mean, it's like if the thing that you're thinking of is like Dune, it's like, okay. Like, and I mean, I haven't read Dune in a very long time, so it might not be the most apropos comparison, but I haven't seen it either in a really long time. But it feels like that kind of like a...
It's just great. It's
just, I don't know. It's,
I love it. It's kind of its own thing, but it's also
its own thing. It's hard to,
it's weird because it really is. It's unlike anything I can think of.
Yeah.
It's very, very European is one thing you can say about it. It does not feel like an American comic at all. It feels like very influenced by the Urowskis and Moebiuses of the world.
Yeah,
and like those
that's
kinds,
a good one, Moebius.
Like, definitely in that land. It's just great stuff. It's just freaking great stuff.
It's freaking nuts, in other words.
It's freaking great, guys.
Freaking nuts.
You should buy this freaking comic. It's freaking great.
Can you imagine if this guy did Thor?
Hey.
It'd be sick, bro.
Imagine if he was doing Pit, bub.
Pit.
That'd be so good.
I can't imagine if he was doing Pit.
And I bet it would be great.
Amazing.
I bet it would be great.
He could do Pit. He could do anything. Honestly, he could do anything. He could do freaking Youngblood, and I'd be like, yes.
I can't wait to see this.
Please.
Yeah. So that's it. That's what we got.
Major X.
Please don't.
Please
don't do Major X.
I won't.
But I will also, while you're looking for trades to talk about, I will pitch my comic, Brad Wraith. We're down to 400 and some sort of dollars away from completion. We've still got 2 weeks left.
You hadn't even launched when I went on vacation. Look how much you've grown.
See, look at what's happened. And we've got stretch goals and all sorts of shit. And you should do it. It's going to be a great comic. We're doing all sorts of fun stuff. So look at that.
I am also going to mention that perhaps there were damages or something, but there were not enough copies of Guardians of the Galaxy number 5 for bring.
Yeah.
So get Guardians of the Galaxy number 5. There was also a book called The Doomster's Monolithic Pocket Alphabet, which looked very interesting.
We've had that for, that's been around for a while.
Okay, it was with the new comics and I hadn't seen it before. So we have some trades. Trades include
that
Battle Angel Alita.
That's being released in the big hardcover versions, thanks to the movie. So
yeah, okay,
they're really nice.
The Horror of Collier County by Rich Tomasso, which looks absolutely amazing.
Yep.
There's an Immortal Hulk second trade in that run. Looks like maybe, or is it the first Hulk in Hell?
Would be the third one.
Immortal Hulk is the third one. Okay. Palestine looks like a new edition of Palestine by Jeff Sacco. You've got a Batman White Knight. Is it an omnibus? Is that new or not
it's,
new?
Yeah, it's the hardcover.
Hardcover. Fairy Tales.
Yes, that is the
master edition.
Yes, the big manga Giganto version of it.
A new version of Frank Miller's Ronin, which is honestly a great book. If you have never read Frank Miller's Ronin, I still have my old beat up copy that I've had since it was like it's like a first edition a trade. It's beat to shit, but it's great. There's a trade of Bitterroot.
Yes,
Volume 1, Family Business.
Bitterroot.
Bitterroot is a favorite of the podcast. And I feel like I would be remiss if I did not talk about Captain Marvel Star Force.
Yeah, what the fuck is that?
They put out a trade, which I figured out from reading the back of it, is the first appearance of ancillary characters that appear in the Captain Marvel film, which I have not seen, although I did see Vengadores in Puerto Rico.
Nice.
So I'm current on my Avengers books or movies, but anyway, except for Captain Marvel. But anyway,
I only know the spoilers in Spanish, is what you're saying.
That's exactly right. Okay. I wished it was actually in Spanish. It just had Spanish subtitles. I will say this about movies in Puerto Rico: snacks are cheap.
Nice.
We got two drinks and a popcorn, and it was $10.
Woo!
Yeah. And I don't know if this is someone who's seen Avengers in America would have to correct me on this or confirm. There were 40 minutes of ads before Avengers in Puerto Rico.
Shit.
Straight up, I timed it. It was like 38 minutes. Of like there was three trailers. You got like Detective Pikachu and like Spider-Man and maybe something else, but then it was like ads, and it was like it went on. Allie was getting snacks and she was like, did it start? And I'm like, no. And then I was just like kind of live tweeting the ads that were happening. Just like, oh my god, oh, this one's for orange vanilla Coke.
The last time Michelle and I went to the movies was like two nights ago, and we swung in like 1 minute before the movie. It was kind of the best. Like the lights had already gone down and they were playing like the last of the garbage commercials. And we basically got nothing but trailers. It perfect. Was fucking awesome.
Yeah, this was like the trailers were interspersed with the ads. But I will say, if you're going to give me cheap snacks, I'll take 40 minutes of ads. Like,
I will not.
I would. I absolutely would. It's a trade-off. Like, I would rather spend $10 on drinks and popcorn than, you know, like, whatever. Anyway, so I was at Avengers for 5 hours.
Would rather you have a blank screen and get a toddler to kick me in the shin for 40 minutes.
Oh, I'll tell you, that's funny that you said that. There was a kid sitting in front of me, but he was really small, and his head was underneath the seat, and I kept forgetting he was there, and I kept kicking his chair, like, over and over again, and I felt so bad, because every time I'd do it, I'd be like, oh, no, there's a kid in that chair. But he was like, and his parents were on either side, and I was like, his parents are going to get mad at me, because I kept kicking him over and over again.
Oh.
I did it like 10 times because that movie's long.
You almost got kicked out of Puerto Rico. Yeah.
Anyway, Captain Marvel Star Force has this really, really bad cover that's hilarious, but it ties into it's the reprints of the first appearances of the Captain Marvel characters.
Cool.
So that came out.
So those are things.
Thanks.
All right, then. That's what we got.
That's a wrap.
Yeah. Follow us at Actually Comics at Coast City Comics.
Yeah, we posted this week.
We actually did. Yeah, we got some stuff up there. So, We'll talk to you soon. Have a good night.
Bye.